Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I know I mentioned at the beginning of the program that I would be calling Lenny Foster up in Fort Defiance, and this is in regards to his participation at the Occupation of Wounded Knee that started on February 27th, 1973, up in South Dakota. So I've got Lenny on the speakerphone here, and go ahead and let's do a quick audio test there, Lenny. Let's see how you sound.
Lenny Foster, Fort Defiance, Arizona. And I've been requested to do an interview with our KGLP host, Strider Brown.
My first question is, can you give us a description of the lead up to the Occupation of Wounded Knee sure. back in 73?
Okay. I'm honored, privileged to be part of your radio show this time. By way of introduction, my name is Lenny Foster. I'm a Kiaani, Tarnhouse Clan, born from Mountain Cold, Tuscany. My Chays are maternal grandparents are Topahe, and my paternal grandparents are Inagahni, one who walks around. And that's my clan, so I'm pleased to be part of your show. 50 years ago, I was part of the takeover of Wounded Knee in South Dakota. I was a member of the American Indian Movement at that time. There was a lot of unrest, big protests in Indian country. A lot of the agreements and treaty rights were being forgotten, ignored. There were a lot of police brutality existing towards Indian people in the border towns. And there were just a lot of issues that Indian people were concern that were not being addressed, and they called on the American Indian Movement. One incident in particular that led up to the takeover of Wounded Knee was the beating of Raymond Yellow Thunder in Gordon, Nebraska, where the white ranchers beat him and put him in the trunk of a car there in Gordon, Nebraska, and his family wanted something done, investigation, and the city police, the state police, the FBI all ignored those requests. So the family of Raymond Yellow Thunder called upon the American Indian Movement to come in into Gordon, Nebraska, and asked for a demand for an investigation. And I think the outcry from Indian people in and around the surrounding areas, the reservation, which is the closest one, was Oglala Sioux Reservation in Pine Ridge, and many of the members of the American Indian Movement were Oglalas, Lakotas. So that led to a huge demonstration of protest in Gordon, Nebraska, where close to 1,000 Indian people converged upon Gordon, Nebraska, and demanded investigation, hearings, meetings with the state police, the FBI, the mayor, the governor's office, and it put the American Indian Movement on a political landscape, and there was no turning back. And after the Trail of Broken Treaties, which was another event that led to the occupation and takeover of the Bureau of Indian Affairs building in Washington, D.C., in October, November of 1972, that also put the American Indian Movement under close scrutiny by the United States government. And what AIM basically was requesting that the human rights of Indian people, civil rights of Indian people, or treaty rights be recognized, and that the Indian people in the border towns and wherever they are residing on your Indian reservations or near border towns, that they be given respect and treated as ordinary citizens or human beings. That wasn't so at that time. So that led to the march and demonstration there at the Bureau of Indian Affairs building in Washington, D.C., which led to a takeover of government building right downtown Washington, D.C. And the request was to meet with President Richard Nixon, but he sent his staff assistants, Leonard Garman, John Ehrlichman, and Bob Heddleman, to meet with the AIM leaders such as Vernon Balcourt, Clyde Balcourt, Dennis Banks, Russell Means, who were some extraordinary Indian leaders. And the request from the American Indian Movement was to honor the resolutions that were submitted in a written form that was formulated by the American Indian Movement and facilitated by Hank Adams. I myself participated in those workshops to formulate the 20-point solution paper. And that was ignored by the Nixon administration. So it really polarized the Indian people and the government. And the killing of an Indian there in a border town, and the meetings that resulted in a confrontation between the American Indian Movement and the city and the state police in Custer, South Dakota, also was another very serious issue, confrontation that took place. So it led to just further discussions at Calico Hall there on the reservation in Oglala, South Dakota, where the elders recommended that something be done against these border towns and the white people. So which the decision was made to make a stand at Wounded Knee, South Dakota, which had historical significance to the Oglala Lakota people, which dates back to the massacre at Wounded Knee, 1890. So that historical significance lent the decision to take over Wounded Knee. That happened. I was there that first night all the way up to, which was Tuesday, February 27th, 1973. That lasted 71 days into ended May 8th, 1973. And it was a very serious a historical event, and there were a number of people who were wounded. Two of our people were killed, Frank Clearwater and Buddy Lamont, and federal marshals were wounded, but none were killed at that time. So that confrontation, which lasted for 71 days, was very intense. We had firefights, daily firefights, which is gun battles between the FBI, federal marshals, and the warriors of Wounded Knee. I myself participated in 11 firefights. I survived, and I relied on my spiritual beliefs, the sweat lodge ceremonies, the pipe ceremonies. We had one Native American church prayer service for it was conducted by our medicine people, spiritual leader Leonard Crudog and Wallace Blackout, and it provided us with that spiritual protection. And that 71 days was probably one of the most interesting and enlightening experience that many of our people had, because it brought about new awareness, new consciousness, a lot of pride. We gained our confidence, and we had our participation in these ceremonies, like I said, that provided us with the insight and the vision and a lot of confidence that we could stand up without fear, without being threatened with jail and treated like discriminated against and treated like second-class citizens. So that whole experience really made us proud of who we were as Indian people, not only right there in Wounded Knee, South Dakota, but throughout Indian country. And I believe right at that same time, on March 1st, right here in Gallup, New Mexico, there was a confrontation by Larry Custuz and Bob Nakaidene, where they went into the mayor's office and confronted the mayor about sale of alcohol and using alcohol as a way to keep our people down. And that led to a confrontation where a shootout happened between the state police and Custuz and Nakaidene, and Larry Custuz was shot and killed right there on the in front of the Sporting Goods there on 66, right downtown. So even that changed the political atmosphere, the landscape for our Dene people, Navajo people. It demonstrated the seriousness of how these discrimination, racist attitude by the city, the border town. So it really changed our Indian people's outlook, our perspective. So there were a lot of changes made right at that time in history, the early 70s, 1973. And I think those changes were necessary and positive. And even to this day, you can see our Indian people have more pride, have dignity, and carry themselves in a good way. And we're good neighbors, and we shouldn't be treated like second-class citizens. That whole experience of Indian rights, which is was necessary to exercise, but also made me realize Indian rights, the business of Indian rights, is very serious. So it brought forth a new awareness, as I said, a new consciousness, dignity, and pride. So that's my take on that question you made.
And certainly, Lenny, the history of what you just described, starting, of course, with Alcatraz 1969, the occupation of the BIA building in 1972, and then the occupation of Wounded Knee, South Dakota, 1973, that it reflects all the way into this current time we're in. And certainly the situation at Standing Rock a few years ago was a reflection of the activism from those days. Do you have any thoughts on the current state of affairs of Native activism in the United States?
Well, I think it's very positive. It's increasing. There's more awareness, as I said, the pride, the dignity among our younger generation. They're learning the history, learning about the culture and the ceremonial practices of our people. You know, Standing Rock was a very extraordinary event. It was an exercise in defending sovereignty, an exercise in water rights, and just human rights of people who live on and near the river, the water. And we have a big stake in keeping the water pure and used for everyone, human beings, the animals, our cattle, horses, sheep, and everyone benefits from having clean water and clean air. And I think the people who were part of that, I myself did not participate in that, though I wanted to, but I had a very bad back. I had a sciatic nerve damage in my back, so, which prohibited me from traveling. And I stayed at home in the Window Rock at the time, and I prayed for them.
Yeah.
Most of them were younger generation. My brothers and nephews, my daughters, they all went and supported and attended that demonstration, and it was probably one of the biggest worldwide Native Indigenous event. It created a lot of awareness among non-Indians, and its support was not only national but international. So it's demonstrated that the Indigenous people or Indian people are players in this whole movement for the environment. We have very much concern about the quality of life for Indian people, living with the environment, maintaining clean water and clean air, and these pipelines that go across the Indian reservations are threatening the water table, is threatening the lives of our Indian people, because we can't, water is very precious. So it became a real struggle for maintaining the quality of life and the pure water and air. So I think that also began another movement, an environmental movement, that most of our younger people are becoming aware of and participating in. And it's involving other nationalities also. So I think the Standing Rock was very significant in our history, Indian history. And I see it's evolving. There's a change in how our Indian people are recognizing that the history of our people are not taught in the schools, and there's a real effort to include history in the curriculum at the schools, the junior high, the high school, colleges. The Indian Studies program is growing. We got more of our younger generation becoming educated and becoming professionals. You see doctors and lawyers and dentists and even spiritual leaders learning the ceremonial ways of our people. And helping in that way. And I think the Indian tribal governments recognize this, and they're recruiting the younger generation who have been educated in these universities and educated in the ways of our people. And I think it demonstrated that with the recent election on Navajo, where a new young 36-year-old young Dene is the president, became the president, Boo Nigrin. Bilingual, very articulate. He represents the new generation of young Navajo. So it's a good prospects for a bright future. And I see that the American Indian Movement, the Indian Movement, International Indian Treaty Council has developed that type of new and young leadership. So I see the prospects for a good future, positive future of our younger people being assertive and knowledgeable, educated, spiritual. So it's good to see that. And the Indian movement, the Indian rights movement, allowed that or developed that type of feeling, that type of thought, lifestyle. The American Indian movement, we're protecting our treaty rights that we feel is an obligation of that. Those documents and those documents that were signed by our ancestors. Now you have a struggle that's beginning for water rights of our Indian water rights is becoming a big issue. So I see that as a new struggle that involves not only the grassroots and traditional people who have always protected and recognized and prayed for that, but also the tribal leaders, the tribal government. They have an obligation, a moral, spiritual, and legal obligation to protect that. So I see that's something that came about from the movement, American Indian Movement. I sincerely believe that. Share it with Alban, Sister Case and Sean. It's a feeling and a belief that we have, many of us who participated. I would like to recognize for this area the people that were from our Navajo people. There was like maybe 9-10 people, including myself. I'm from Fort Defiance. We had Andrew Begay from Tuba City, Jake Sky from Hauk, the Platero sisters from Blue Water, Sarah, Lorraine, Luana, Dave Begay from Albuquerque, New Mexico, Merle Anderson, Larry Anderson from Fort Defiance, Joe Singer from Shiprock, Albert Moss from Hauk, Arizona. These are some of the Dene who participated in the occupation of Wounded Knee, and sometimes they're forgotten. I would like to take this time to recognize them so that way they're not forgotten. And we have a 50-year anniversary coming up here. And the dates for that is February 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th, up at Wounded Knee, South Dakota, Porcupine, Rapid City. They're having events. They have a big powwow to recognize and honor the Wounded Knee veterans. I'm planning to attend. They have a feast that will be provided for the people who attend, and also, again, honoring the veterans who are Wounded Knee vets, their families and their relatives. And they're going to have a symposium. And they will recognize some of the women warriors. Madonna, Thunderhawk, like I mentioned, Angie Begay, and the Platero sisters. Some of these people, the Navajo women that were there, are going to be recognized. And hopefully others like Albert Moss, Joe Singer, he passed away, with Larry Anderson, Merle Anderson. We hope they attend and be part of that. Sometimes, like I said, these people are forgotten. But that event, it changed a lot of lives. It changed my life. At the time, I was a student at Colorado State University in Fort Collins. And that's north of Denver. And I used to go to the Denver Indian Center for their weekly powwows on weekends. And that's where I met Vernon Belcourt, Clyde Belcourt, who were Dennis Banks, who were the founders or co-founders of the American Indian Movement. And I remember I became acquainted with Vernon Belcourt, and he invited me to join the American Indian Movement there in Denver, which I did. And I dropped out for a couple years to participate in the American Indian Movement activities, the BIA takeover, Wounded Knee, Raymond Yellow Thunder, and Gordon, Nebraska, Cass Lake, was a fishing and hunting right struggle there. Cass Lake, Leech Lake on the Ojibwe Reservation, and that's where, when I say the fishing and hunting rights, many times the reservations, including Navajo, non-Indians were allowed to just come onto the reservation and hunt fish without any permit, without any hunting license or fishing license. All that stopped. Ojibwe's up in Cass Lake, Leech Lake, Minnesota set a precedence for all of Indian country throughout the United States, where the non-Indians from the towns and cities had to pay a license or a permit to hunt deer and elk, hunting or fishing. And I see that done here on the Navajo now. So that was done in 1972. When I say Cass Lake and Leech Lake, that's where a lot of that began. And I would like to recognize also the AIM was a spiritual movement.
Yeah.
Our participation in the sweat lodge ceremonies, pipe ceremonies, where we learn to use the cleansing and the purification ceremonial ways of the Northern Plains. But we have that. We use that. Native American Church have the sweat lodge ceremonies as part of the NAC meetings. So religious freedom was very important. And I myself did 37 years of work in the Federal Bureau of Prisons, advocating and providing talking circles and leading the sweat lodge ceremonies and pipe ceremonies and counseling, spiritual counseling for our Navajo and other Native Americans. And I visited a total of 96 facilities. And was instrumental in ensuring the use of the sweat lodge as a program that would be recognized on equal basis as other denominations, as the Christians, and the Jewish faith, Islamic. So that's being done today. And I took that experience I had at Wounded Knee, and I developed a program with the Navajo Nation, Department of Behavioral Health, and then put together a program and which was approved by the Navajo Nation Council, and allowed me to visit state prisons, New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, Utah, Texas, Oklahoma, also the federal prisons throughout the United States. One of my notable client is Leonard Peltier. He's been in prison for over 48 years for being accused of in a firefight up in Oglala, South Dakota in 1975, where they said that he had a part aiding and abetting in the killing of two FBI agents. Like I said, Indian riots can be serious business. And that's what happened with the Lakota people who stood up for their rights. We're no longer going to be subject to racism, discrimination, treated like second-class citizens. And so Leonard Peltier is still incarcerated for a lot of that happened. And then another a good representation or example of providing that leadership is the International Indian Treaty Council was formed, and then taking the pipe and our issues into the United Nations in Geneva, Switzerland, making interventions on human rights and treaty rights. And now the mascot issue has become it's always been a big issue, but it became prominent when the Washington football team was forced to drop their name. And there's other sports teams that are being looked at, Kansas City, Cleveland, hockey teams in Chicago. They're using Indians as mascots. We're human beings. We're not mascots.
Oh.
We're not here for America's fun and games. We're living human beings with feelings and rights. So that needs to be recognized, and that's why there's a movement against changing of these discriminatory practices by professional sports, making a mockery of Indian people, dressing up like Indians, getting drunk and hoopering and hollering, acting like they're Indians. They won't allow us to be Indians, but they want to play Indian.
Ah.
I think you saw that on the Super Bowl last week.
Ah.
Where people were chanting and acting crazy, pretending that's what an Indian person is like. So those kinds of issues are being challenged and looked at, and making efforts to change. So we all have a big part in this movement, because we want the future to be bright and positive for our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. The history being taught accurately, or even just being told what happened. You know, Kit Carson, Custer, people like that, they don't represent a true history of what happened. They were the exploiters. So these are some things that come to mind, Strider.
Yeah.
I know it's a long question, but long answer for your question, but it's something that that we all are a part of one way or another. We recognize that the changes are being made. We have an input at the state capitol, the federal legislation. We have Deb Haaland as a representative for the first Native American to be appointed in the Department of Interior to head. So that's a good positive change that are being made. And we have our legislatures being elected. whether they're state legislatures or federal legislatures. So we're having an input into these agencies, the government. And my daughter is a state senator.
Oh, yeah.
In South Dakota, Red Dawn Foster. Her mother is from Pine Ridge.
Ah.
And she ran for office there, serving her second term as a state senator from Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Her mother is Oglala Lakota, and she's born for Kiaani. So that's how things are developing in Indian country. We're being part of the society, where we have our universities starting to implement or have implemented Indian Studies program, Native American Studies program. Universities are recruiting more Native students. So that's a good sign of the results of the movement. I call it the Indian Rights Movement. You know, you can call it the American Indian Movement. You can call it Indians of all tribes from Alcatraz. You can call it the Standing Rock Movement, Water Protectors. Or you can call them young Indian students that are in these colleges and universities. So it brought about a lot of changes, making that stand at Wounded Knee. That's how I see the good results of that. Of course, it was very dangerous. It was, like I said, daily firefights, gun battles. And it was not always precipitated by the Indian people. It was a overreaction by the federal marshals and the FBI. I don't think they realized that we were going to stand up. And I think the one thing they didn't recognize either, too, is there are a lot of Wounded Knee Vietnam veterans that were part of the American Indian Movement.
Uh-huh.
They were trained by the United States Armed Forces, went to Vietnam and walked point for Army. The Marines came back and became part of the takeover at Wounded Knee, Alcatraz, the BIA takeover. Are involved in the Native American church prayer ceremonies, Sundance, powwows, tribal leaders. So it's good to see all of that. So it's a very positive changes in Indian country. So that's what I see or what I feel when I look at what the American Indian Movement brought by their participation, standing 71 days stand down or stand off against the government forces in Wounded Knee, South Dakota. And the reunion is going to bring a lot of people hopefully back together that are still alive. I'm planning to go. So I see some old friends there. I was in a little bighorn bunker. We had a bunker on the eastern side of the community where I had people like John Carlson, Fuzzy Miller, Menominee, John Perot, he was a Menominee. John Carlson was Ojibwe from White Earth, Minnesota. Percy Casper, he was a Shuswap from British Columbia. Those are all young men. We were all young then. 50 years ago, we were 24 and 25 years old. I was 25 years old 50 years ago. Boy, time flies when you're busy and
yeah,
doing some good hard work. So that's my take on this, Strider.
Well, I believe that your history and the participation in very important history is it sets a high watermark for many of the young Native people to aspire to participating in positive change. And one last question, what is the current situation as far as the Biden administration in regards to the incarceration of Leonard Peltier?
Boy, Leonard Peltier, he's been locked up, like doing some hard time. Close to 48 years. He's 78 years old. I sundanced with him in Crow Dog's Paradise in Rosebud, South Dakota in 1975. I met him on the streets of Denver, Colorado. I became acquainted with him, became good friends. We did, we prayed and smoked a pipe and put down cedar for him with the charcoal ashes in the fireplace at places like Leavenworth, Kansas, the United States Federal Penitentiary, Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, Long Park, California. Now he's at Coleman, Florida, maximum security. And it's perhaps one of the toughest cases. And there's a lot of mistakes that were made by the United States criminal justice system. Recently, the seven United States senators have written letters to President Joe Biden to release Leonard Peltier. There's been two United States attorneys who tried the case that are have reneged on their conviction and said he was railroaded, he should be released. So these kind of developments are happening, and it's been hard, difficult to get him a release, executive clemency or commutation. But I believe it's going to happen. But he's up in age.
Yeah,
78 years old, and it was a scare just last week that he was sick. You know, he caught COVID, and you know, you have even the flu and the cold, or common cold, can be threatening to somebody and that's up in age like that. So it's a very delicate matter that we want to see him released. A petition that's been submitted by attorney Kevin Sharp to President Joe Biden has been submitted. It's sitting on the president's desk for his review and approval. Also, the U.S. pardon attorney has a copy of that same petition requesting that they grant him a commutation and release him, and we pray that that will happen. But he's still incarcerated, and like I said, it's probably one of the toughest cases in the criminal justice system, and a lot of people are coming forward, you know, giving their support. And also recently, even former FBI agents have said that there's a vendetta to keep Leonard Peltier in prison, but they're wrong. They made mistakes, railroading him. So these things are coming to light. Hopefully soon he'll be granted clemency, released from United States Federal Bureau of Prison, and it's all in the hands of President Joe Biden. We're hoping and continue to pray.
I would like to ask real quick, should letters, you know, from listeners be sent to the White House in regards to the Leonard Peltier situation?
Yeah, that would be good. I don't have the address right in front of me, but if you have access to a laptop, you can see the address for the White House, and even the phone number, that is for the White House. And I'll have to look it up and give you that phone number. At the White House, you can make a call and make a simple request that they leave.
Okay, I can even round that up here in the studio, and before the end of the program, I will announce the phone number and mailing address for the White House and the president.
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're a good man.
I very much appreciate all the work you've done for so many years and still doing the work. And that you, as I said earlier, you've helped to set a high watermark for future activists, Native
Thank
activists.
You.
And
yeah,
I very much appreciate your, participating with yet another interview. I know that I've been very much honored with being able to interview you over the past 15 or more years, and very
yes,
much appreciated that. And
so
I wish you very safe travels and a clear path up to South Dakota and then coming back home, and that everything goes positive and smooth in a good way for you on the way up and home and then coming home.
Thank you.
Yeah, so again, do you have any last thoughts you'd like to share, for...
Well, we would appreciate a phone call to the White House. They have a line that's open, 202-456-1111. And just leave a respectful message requesting that Leonard Peltier be granted clemency and release. And again, that number is 202-456-1111. And we want Leonard Peltier to be released and come home, or to his home up in North Dakota, Turtle Band of Chippewas, in, near Fargo, North Dakota. He's an in-law, by the way. He has Kathy Peltier, who's Dene, too, his daughter.
All right. Well, I wish you great success and a safe journey. And
thank you.
Look forward to seeing you again in the near future, hopefully.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Prayers and good wishes for a safe journey there, Lenny. Thank you so much for your time and your good words. Okay.
Yeah. Going on.
Oh, take care. Okay, that was the interview with Lenny Foster,